Welcome to a Monday episode of the Soccer Central Podcast. I'm John Molinaro, Chief Football Reporter for Sportsnet. Hope you had a lovely weekend, and for those of you in specific parts of Canada, hope you're enjoying this family day and you're spending it with the people you love. Hopefully you're also staying warm, because it's quite frigid here in Toronto. Frankly, I've had just about enough of this cold weather, and I'm seriously considering moving to Mallorca. And the only thing I hate more than winter is snow, is people who embrace the cold. I mean, they should be miserable like me, as far as I'm concerned. Anyway, rant over. A busy weekend ahead as the Premier League returns to action after taking this past weekend off due to the fifth round of the FA Cup. James Sharman will be by later in the show to discuss that. But first, the UEFA Champions League returns this week after 2 months sabbatical with four round of 16 matches, including Manchester City versus Barcelona. Here to preview the slate of European games is Jared Peters, a Winnipeg-based soccer writer and regular Sportsnet.ca contributor. Jared, how are you?
I'm well. I thought for a second you were going to say you were going to move to Winnipeg.
Never.
You can. I don't know if you can hear it. There's actually a snowplow going outside my place right now. I hope it doesn't disturb us too much. But we got dumped on last night. It's that heavy, wet kind of snow you expect in spring, and it's making everything pretty messy.
Well, better you than us, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, exactly. I don't want to hear you guys complaining about cold temperatures either.
Oh, that won't stop us. We'll still complain. Well, listen, as I said, I mean, the Champions League back in full swing this week and next. When you look at the four matches this week slated for Tuesday and Wednesday, which one for you is the most intriguing and why?
Well, they all have certain fascinating talking points around them. If I had to pinpoint one, of course, I think it would be Manchester City-Barcelona. Barca, of course, coming off a 6-0 trouncing of Rayo Vallecano. They're getting some key people back at an important time. Obviously, Messi now is very much match fit and in really good nick. Neymar came on as a sub against Vallecano. He looks like he... I don't know if he'll start against City, but obviously he came off the bench and scored at the weekend and offers a really good option for Tata Martino there. And then City, coming off a very, very important win against Chelsea, avenging their 1-0 defeat from earlier this month. They've been scoring for fun a lot this season, and it should be a very high-octane, offensive contest. That goal in this one should be very good entertainment.
Aguero has, of course, been ruled out today due to injury for Tuesday's tie. You know, obviously, City still has a lot of depth and quality in their starting lineup. Just wondering how do you think this affects the Blues going into the first leg?
I can't think of many sides, never mind in England, but in Europe, that have the kind of strength and options that Pellegrini has at City. Yes, Aguero has been ruled out. I believe Fernandinho could start for them.
Yeah, he's questionable, but he might play.
They have James Milner suspended as well, but they're so deep. And again, in the FA Cup game against City, we saw Jovetic get a rare start. He obviously had some real injury problems to start the season and is only now kind of rounding back into form, but
right.
He looks really good. He's been playing really well with Dzeko, but I kind of have a hunch that it'll be Negredo that plays with him. Dzeko seems to often need 5 or 6 chances to actually put the ball in the back of the net, but the layoff he had for the Jovetic goal against Chelsea was really nice, so there is that option too. I don't see the lack. Obviously, Aguero is an all-world player, but I wouldn't, if Barcelona were to win, I wouldn't put that down on him.
Is Barcelona an underrated commodity? And I know that's going to sound like a bit of a silly question, but my sense is that, you know, everyone is talking about Bayern Munich this season, about the team to beat in the Champions League, and rightly so. I mean, they're the defending champions, and they're, you know, on incredible form of pace right now. I just wonder if people are overlooking the Catalans and writing them off as past it a little bit too soon.
If they are, I'm sure that suits Barcelona just fine. There have been moments this season where they haven't looked all that convincing. One thing I was hoping to see from Martino when he came, and I wrote this in the column for Sportsnet.ca when he was appointed, was that I had hoped that he would offer a bit more of a plan B than what we saw under previous managers, particularly Tito Villanova. That hasn't necessarily been the case. It still seems very slow, agonizing build-up through the middle. And a lot of the times when Danny Alves does get far enough down the right, he just plays in cross after cross that really doesn't give an option, because they just simply don't play that kind of wide crossing football. You're right. People are talking a lot about Bayern Munich, and people are getting on board with a lot of other kind of exciting teams that they're enjoying watching right now, like Real Madrid and Atletico Madrid as well. So if Barcelona are flying under the radar, that's probably, quite frankly, to their liking. I would never rate them out of anything, but this city's team will definitely give them a very good test.
You're a big backer of Neymar, the Brazilian. What you've seen so far this season, what has he brought to the Catalans in terms of style of play and you know, just the way that they go into games, do you think?
If there is a plan B, he is their plan B in a person.
Right.
He is the most exciting player on that team. Stylistically, my personal preference is watching a player like Neymar, even above a player like Messi. He brings that just electrifying one-on-one presence that can turn a game in an instant, where you might have five or six or seven or eight passes linking Xavi, Iniesta, Busquets, Messi in a really complicated and eye-catching forward movement. Neymar can accomplish the same distance, the same sort of action in a matter of seconds by himself from his position out on the left. I kind of don't think he'll start against City, but I think Pedro will get that position. That just gives them another option from the bench, someone who can totally change the outlook of that match and what City have to expect in an instant. And a Zabaleta Neymar head-to-head, I think, would be fascinating.
It's a nice option to have coming off the bench.
Yeah.
We're talking to soccer writer Jared Peters on the Soccer Central podcast. What about PSG? Is there is there a round of 16 tie against Bayer Leverkusen? I mean, is that as easy as it appears on paper, or
yeah,
might the German? Oh, it is. Okay.
They're getting Leverkusen at a very good time. Leverkusen were really, really hot before the Christmas break, has kind of fallen off since the Bundesliga has a very extended winter break, and they've not quite looked the same after that. I think this is a pretty good matchup for PSG. Emre Can is suspended, I believe, and Robbie Cruz is still injured for Leverkusen, who will also play a 4-3-3 similar to what PSG would put out. I can see PSG scoring twice away from home in this match, to be honest with you, and taking it back into Paris. I'm not ever convinced that PSG can keep a clean sheet, but I don't foresee them having any difficulty of scoring Leverkusen in this one.
Obviously, the Parisians flying high in Liga seem to be the favorites to repeat as champions. European exploits, though. I mean, you know, last year, what was it, in the quarterfinals that they bowed out to Barcelona, perhaps a little bit unfortunately, because I think there's an argument that could be made that they were probably the better team on that tie.
That's right.
But I don't know. I mean, when you look at sort of all the retooling that they did in both, you know, both transfer windows, the summer and the January one, do you see them as potentially kind of getting through that top tier of teams, you know, the Bayern Munichs and the Barcelona and the Real Madrids, and possibly, you know, taking a run at this as legitimate title contenders?
Absolutely. I definitely see them as not an underdog, but maybe at the top of that group of dark horse teams, just below the top tier of the Bayerns, the Madrids, and the Barcelonas. I really think they can make a push into the semifinals this year. Even you talk about the players they signed. Obviously, Kabay was one of them now again in January. But flying under the radar this year and playing extremely well has been Thiago Mata, and he's just
totally agree.
No one can push him out of the side at the moment. Of all the big money that they have spent in Paris the last few years, then they get Mata on a song, and he's been phenomenal, and he makes Marco Verratti look better than he is sometimes. Matuidi is another midfielder that I really think doesn't get the amount of recognition that he could. All of a sudden, Kabay, who wanted regular football at a big European club, might have a little difficulty breaking into that midfield, and I don't see him getting a start this week.
AC Milan hosts Atletico Madrid, who, for me, I think have been one of the best stories in European club football this year. Diego Simeone's side, they've breezed through the group stage pretty easily, and now they're you know, they're sitting in a tie for first place with Real and Barca in La Liga, despite, you know, not having anywhere close to the same amount of resources as the two Spanish giants have. How have they done this?
They've given chances to players that have really not found homes at other teams in a way, and in a much lesser way. Udinese have done the same thing for the past few years, kind of picking players off the scrap heap and giving them a second chance. Gabi has been very good in the center of midfield for them. That's a really good example. One guy that I really, really rate and that I could see giving Milan all sorts of fits in this is Arda Turan. Again, a player that probably doesn't get as much recognition as he should, a little bit more this season, simply because Atletico are doing so well. He'll be lining up on the left, and I think if he goes up against the Stiglio, that could be a very interesting matchup. They get Devin Villa back at a very good time as well, because Simeone likes to play Villa up front with Diego Costa. When he has reverted to a 4-2-3-1 this season, it hasn't looked as convincing as it has with his preferred 4-2-2. If I would be concerned about anything, it would be at left back for Atletico de Madrid, because Felipe Luis, who has been getting some minutes for the Brazilian national team, is still injured, and Insua has really been on and off when he's come in, and he hasn't looked all that convincing to me. So perhaps there's an opening there for Milan to get behind him. Milan, of course, are full of talking points right now. Balotelli scoring late for them to win in their last match, and I think we could see Messi in play for them right now, too. Perhaps as well will likely get a start. I don't think they're going to change that much from the team that beat the Bologna. Could see Abate playing a little bit more of a attacking right-sided role in this match.
What's your, obviously, Diego Costa, a key player for Atletico, and you mentioned David Villa there before, but who else do you see playing a pivotal role for them? For me, I've been quite impressed with Koke, the young Spaniard. Just wanted to get your impression of him.
I have a very high impression of him, and a lot of that has to do with his versatility. I mean, when you read all the transfer stories about this team and that team wanting to sign defensive midfielder Koke from Atletico Madrid, that's one part of his game. He's a very good tackling midfielder who can turn play down the other way in an instant by making a good, well-timed tackle without fouling people. But he also plays wide on the right, which is where I actually think he's going to play in this game. He's not by any means a marauding, attacking right-sided midfielder, and he'll tuck in nicely when someone else wants to go forward. But he combines so well on that right-hand side with Juan Fran. For such a young player to play so many different roles for a side that is doing as well as they are right now, is quite impressive. You really can't speak highly enough about him in that regard.
Yeah, I would agree. I've been quite impressed with him, and I think he's, you know, it's unfortunate that he gets sort of labeled just as a, defensive or holding midfielder sometimes, because I do think he can create a little bit, and he has an offensive upside to him.
Definitely, and, you know, it's to the opposition's detriment if they only label him as that one-dimensional defensive midfielder, because he does offer so much more, for sure.
Absolutely. Arsenal versus Bayern, another marquee matchup with the Germans, I think, riding a 40-game unbeaten run in the Bundesliga.
Yeah.
It seems like it would tough times for the Gunners. But, I mean, if you're Arsene Wenger, how do you go about playing this one, at the Emirates in the opening leg?
Limit the damage. I think they can actually go for it in the second leg if they can limit the damage, unlike what happened last time, where, again, last season it was home at the Emirates, away in Bavaria for the Gunners. And they got smoked in the first leg, and that really, even though they went out and played a really good second leg and won 2-0, the damage had been done. It bodes well for them that both Ribery and Shaqiri are injured. What that does mean is likely that Arjen Robben comes in and plays on the left, which, you know, again, a team so full of options that, you take one player out and replace them almost like for like, and few teams have that luxury. If Arsenal can limit Bayern even to a goal, would be ideal. Two, if you even lose 2-1, I think they're still very much in it. I somehow fancy their chances in the second leg more than I do in the first one. So at this point for me, it's damage control, which becomes a little more difficult actually with Arteta suspended for this one. That's difficult. But Flamini will come in and try to clean up. Sorry.
No, go ahead. Finish.
No, that, I still don't see. I would like to think that there would be a competitive tie here. To be honest, I just don't see it.
Yeah, I mean, as I said, the writing on the wall doesn't sort of look all that good with Bayern in the form that they are. I do wonder, though, and you kind of touched on it there briefly about Ribery and Shaqiri both being out due to injury. Obviously, Robin probably expected to come in. Do their absences, I mean, how much do they hurt Bayern, do you think?
Well, they've been so used to having either one of them out on the left this season, and they move inside so well. Robin offers the same thing often from the right-hand side. I don't, to be honest, John, I just don't see much of a drop-off there.
Right.
And I don't see Sanya necessarily as a right-back that you have a lot of trouble getting in behind. But what I am interested in seeing from Pep Guardiola's point of view is what he does in the midfield, who he starts. Schweinsteiger, of course, has come back and is match fit for this. Does he go inside alongside Cruz or do they go with the Barcelona midfielder, Thiago Alcántara? His name is just escaping me for a bit. Who has been very good when he's come in. I think we'll see Lahm again in that holding role in between the defense and the midfield. But I'm curious to see if Schweinsteiger gets a start in this one. To be honest, that's one of the talking points for me for Bayern.
Right. I wonder too, because you know, obviously Bayern's such a big and powerful side. Arsenal, not so much. So perhaps that's one of the keys, too, for Bayern in terms of, you know, trying to muscle them off the ball and use their power and their strength to their advantage.
No, I think that's a very good point. And that would only make more of a case for Schweinsteiger coming into the team.
Yes, yeah, exactly. We got to go, Jared. But before we let you go, tell our listeners where they can check out some of your fine, very fine work.
Just go to sportsnet.ca, hit the links for soccer, and you'll see my handsome mugshot there at the bottom of the page. And click my name, you'll see the work I've done for the site. And every Saturday, I'm also in the Winnipeg Free Press, coming up with story ideas and generally hitting the major leagues of Europe and a little bit of South America, which is just kicking off now at the Argentine League and the Campeonato Paulista, which I like to follow as well.
And what's your Twitter handle, for in case people don't know?
At Jared Peters, simple as that.
That's good stuff. Listen, Jared, thanks so much for joining us, and we'll talk soon.
Cheers.
Cheers. Now, please be joined by James Sharman, host of the Soccer Central television show here on Sportsnet. Sharms, how are you?
I am doing wonderful. How are you doing, Jamo?
Good. Staying warm?
Trying to, yeah. I'm actually, my desk here at Sportsnet is right by this enormous window, but it's also beneath a huge vent. So when the sun shines, it's warm. When it doesn't shine, it's bloody freezing. So there's nothing in between.
What a diva. Holy cow,
I am such
man.
A diva, man. You have no idea.
Can you believe this, listeners? Holy jeez,
I think
man.
They can.
My
I
goodness.
I believe it.
Unreal.
Yeah.
Well, enough of that. Let's talk some football.
Sure.
You're a big fan of the FA Cup. I'm sure you watched a bit of the fifth round games this past weekend. What stood out for you for the most?
Well, obviously, it will be the Brighton-Hull game later today, naturally. I'm kidding, of course. Although it could be a very good game and an interesting game. Yeah, yeah. As you mentioned, I love the FA Cup no matter who's playing in it. But listen, let's be honest here. You know, the big teams attract the big interest. And I thought Man City beating Chelsea, that was a fantastic performance to shut out a Chelsea team that's just rolling at the moment. And, you know, it's funny how last week regarding Arsenal, Arsene Wenger mentioned how the team was nervous against Man U coming off a loss to Liverpool. Well, you know, that to me doesn't really speak of the championship credentials. City are coming off losses to Chelsea extremely recently as well, and I thought they played some brilliant football against the Blues on the weekend. Mourinho pretty much went with what he went with first time around, a couple of changes here and there, whereas, you know, City did change things up a bit, and I thought they're very, very good. And we finally have seen the potential of Stefan Jovetic, aren't we?
Yes.
Being fulfilled. It's taken a while. He's had terrible injury concerns over recent years, but there's been a lot of money in this kid, and it's good to see him now playing, if not regular football, more regular football, and scoring goals.
What did you think of my beloved Arsenal putting the boots to your beloved Liverpool?
Waiting for that one. I was waiting for that. Hey, you know, that was a good
was.
Play, wasn't it?
Very entertaining.
That was what I like about the FA Cup. Two teams that went for it. And you know, I think, speaking of, you know, confidence once again, seeing Liverpool go to the Emirates, you know, against obviously a superb Arsenal team and went at them. Showed some real gusto, some real courage, I think, and
yep.
showed their confidence right now. Where is that? Could have gone either way. There was some controversy, obviously, with Luis Suarez and the Podolski incident in the box. But overall, you know, I thought two even teams. And I think as much as Liverpool lost this game, that may be the game where I'm now a believer that this team can be a challenger very, very soon, because they had swagger in that game. And
really?
Going forward, they were exciting as hell to watch.
Huh, interesting. So you think this might be a tipping point of sorts?
I think
Liverpool.
It might be, yeah. Yeah, I mean, that 5-1 result last week, yeah, it was great for Liverpool fans, obviously, but let's be honest, it was a complete anomaly. You know, Liverpool is not 4 goals better than Arsenal.
Right.
It was one of those odd games, you know, that crazy 20-minute stretch. So it was great and a huge 3 points, but from a performance standpoint, you know, this kind of result, to me, just, you know, just showing the swagger and courage they showed going to, you know, the home of a potential champion and playing that way, I think it might be a pinpoint, yeah, and this year is probably too late, obviously, but it shows they're building for the future. I think they're very much where they are, and maybe they've not united off their perch 25 years too late.
Right. Did Liverpool have a case to feel hard done by? I mean, when you look at the second Suarez penalty, that probably mm-hmm. should have been, you know, I mean, I don't know, for me, I thought it was a pretty clear-cut case of it being a penalty. I mean, what was
yeah.
your take on that?
Here's my thing. It was. There's no doubt that was a penalty, and there's no doubt Howard Webb dropped the ball with it. But the bottom line is, it's Luis Suarez who is being judged
right.
on the sins of the past, right? He is renowned for going to ground too easily. He even embellished that one.
Didn't
he
did.
Need to.
Yep.
Clearly he embellished it. And, you know, part of the referee thought, well, this guy's at it again. I'm not going to give it to him. And I think it's as simple as that. And if you live by the sword, you die by the sword, right? And if Luis Suarez is going to continue behaving this way on the field, week in and week out, he's not going to get the calls. You know, the referees will have enough of him, and it's going to be as simple as that. So as much as there's very much a right for the Reds to feel aggrieved in that situation, well, if this guy just behaved himself a little bit more week in and week out, maybe he'd get the calls. And I think it's as simple as that.
I wonder if Howard Webb, too, was kind of had one of those moments where he said, well, you know what, I just gave this guy a penalty a
yeah.
couple of minutes ago, and am I really going to give him
well,
a second
yeah.
one?
Well, yeah. I agree, but I mean, I don't think the first one was a soft penalty.
No, not at all.
It was to me, it's pretty blatant as well. You do see that often, don't you, when you see a referee
absolutely.
A soft penalty and then maybe he'll turn a blind eye next time around. But that wasn't a soft penalty, and he must have felt pretty confident when he made that call first time around. So if that was what he was thinking, that surprises me, because Howard Webb's been there, done it, got the T-shirt, right? You know, there are very few more experienced referees than him. But it possibly, yeah. Yeah, I thought Steven Gerrard could have been sent off as well in that game, right? So
yeah.
it wasn't all against Liverpool, but, you know, perhaps it's a shame that it was settled the way it was. But overall, you know, give the Gunners credit. They have rebounded, you know, this little patch from hell. People are saying that they're coming off the tracks. Well, you know, yeah, they lost last week badly. They then tied United, which isn't always the worst result in the world. And now they've beaten Liverpool. Now they've got, obviously, an enormous match coming up this week. If they can get, you know, a result or a draw in that one, if there's a big if, then suddenly this little patch of theirs hasn't been so bad after all.
I was quite impressed. I'm not sure about you, but I was quite impressed with Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain for Arsenal on Sunday.
Oh, yeah.
I thought he was just, you know, a man of the match performance.
Boy, are they different with him in the side.
Yeah, well, that was my question. Why? I mean, why do you think that is?
Pace. Look at that team, right? Arsenal
right.
are a wonderful passing team. And when they break, they can pass. They can break quickly through passing. But as far as having, you know, sprinters in the wings, that really don't have those players, especially with Walcott going out injured this season. So you bring in the Ox, and he is just that. He's a track star, right? And I think they suddenly add that urgency to their attack, which they were missing before. And listen, they did really well early in the season without him because he's been injured for so long. But this is a guy that's really almost under the radar.
I would agree.
Last year or so, isn't
yeah.
it? Because he's kind of been overshadowed by other England stars, so to speak. But I think he's going to be, when he gets his game, which he clearly has now, he could be very hard to take out of that team and out of England's team as well for the World Cup.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, it obviously bodes well for Arsenal, but I would argue it probably even bodes even more better for England because, you know, you talked about, you know, needing those kinds of players who can, you know, make a difference, you know, immediately and are really kind of strong, you know, pacey with attacking instincts. You know, I'm not sure England has that many of them, but he seems to be, you know, he could be, you know, a very key figure for England potentially this summer.
Yeah, and he seems tactically rather smart, you know.
Right.
In the past, you've had these track stars for England who just haven't had a clue tactically.
Right.
And once they've been figured out by an opponent's defense, you know, they just, you know, lose their you know, ability on the field. But he seems to be a guy that can adapt. He can cut inside really well as going wide. And I think he's a player that is going to be very important for England. And, you know, obviously playing, you know, in the Premier League is very different to international football, but he's kind of the prototypical English winger, isn't he?
Yeah.
In many ways. So I think if you have him and you got Sterling playing really well as well on the other side, I mean, he's been sensational this season, quite frankly. He's really come into his own, especially in recent weeks. You've got some really good young talent there, you know, in the wide positions for England. Throw in Andros Townsend's name, who during the last round of qualifying was just outstanding for England as well. And, you know, suddenly it doesn't look quite as you know, bereft of talent as perhaps it once did.
We're talking to James Sherman on the Soccer Central podcast. Sunderland beat Southampton 1-0 at the Stadium of Light on Saturday in, I think, what can charitably be called a pretty uneventful match.
Yes.
I always mispronounce his name.
Pochettino?
Yeah. Fielded.
I'm not sure.
Yeah. He fielded, I think, again, what can be charitably called an understrength Saints side against the Black Cats. Surprised? I mean, Southampton, you know, they're not going to go down. So, you know, this was something, you know, an FA Cup run that could have rewarded their fans with by taking it a little bit more seriously.
It is, isn't it? And maybe it's a statement on a European coach not giving the FA Cup the credit it deserves.
But possibly. Yeah.
Right now, I mean, what this a dead season now, isn't it, Southampton? They're eighth place.
Yeah.
39 points. Like I said, they're 15 points up from the drop zone. They're not going down. They're lucky not going to be in the European spots in the league. So here we are now, 26 games into the season. And in the league, they're just going to be there. And the FA Cup, they're out of now. And you're right, it could have been something for their fans. And, like, I think Southampton fans would love a deep cup run this season. You know, it's just what this team needs. They're at that point in their development where perhaps Europe's a little bit early, but a nice deep cup run, quite possible, right? So, yeah, it was a shame what he did. Obviously, yes, there's some of the young players still playing this weekend, but overall, it's very much a side that wouldn't have been put out in the Premier League. So he's looking ahead. And I think it's just an example of, you mentioned it before, obviously the FA Cup has been hit
right
in many angles, and that's a prime example of how some clubs don't care. And if you look around the grounds this week, there's a lot of empty seats, weren't there?
There was, so, especially, you know, that game, too.
Yeah. So as much as I think it's bounced back somewhat in the last couple of years, it's still hurting that tournament, and that's a shame.
Right. Fulham making a change, firing Rene Malunstein and then appointing Felix Magath.
Yeah. Wow.
That should be an interesting one.
Don't you wish that Berbatov was still there?
Oh, I know.
And Adel Taarabt. Yeah. My God, I mean, if the listeners don't know, you know, Felix Magath is a head case. He is a hard, hard man, iron fist, old school manager. Had great success at Wolfsburg, went to Bayern Munich, did okay for a year, but then the players got, you know, bored of him pretty quickly. And even the Bayern brass have been pretty resounding in their criticism of his tactics as a manager in the last few weeks. So, yeah, Rene Malunstein was, I guess you could say, the total opposite. He is a player's coach.
Yeah.
You know, players loved him, but 75 days in the job. 75 days. What is this? The Italian Serie A? Wow. This new owner comes in to Fulham, and boy, he's doing it his own way, isn't he? I'm not sure I agree with it, but I think they probably should have kept Martignol to start with. I like Martignol a lot.
Right.
But they were struggling, and desperate times calls for desperate measures, and this team could be going down this season. It's quite possible. So they'll still be playing a disciplined brand of football anyway.
Right. More verbal antics from Jose Mourinho, as he recently called Arsene Wenger, quote, a specialist in failure. Wenger responded today by saying Jose is an embarrassment. I don't know. Are you like me? Are you getting just tired of these verbal jabs? It just seems to be what's the point anymore?
It's contrived in many ways for Mourinho. I mean, I love Mourinho. Don't get me wrong. It's great, but I don't know why he was targeting Arsenal. I saw him targeting Man City last week, and I think
right.
It's because he saw Man City as being a real threat. Well, maybe he does see Arsenal as being a threat. I think he sees Arsenal as being a fragile team mentally. And their manager has proven in the past to react to such things, which is what Wenger did today. You know, I'd rather Wenger just kept quiet, quite frankly, and didn't say anything.
Right.
any response. Don't give him the time. Don't bring any more exposure to what, to his words. But, you know, in the past they've had issues, right? Wasn't he called the voyeur by Jose Mourinho?
Yes.
Many years ago now. So, yeah, to me it gets a bit boring, a bit contrived, you know. I don't mind it when it's clearly a strategy at play. Ferguson was the god at that, wasn't he? And Mourinho's shown, you know, an ability as himself, but it seems now every time the cameras are on Jose Mourinho, he feels he's got to say something. And it's like, okay, let's just spread out the good stuff, the good right. quotes a little bit here.
Right, yeah, it's a long season, pace himself.
Yeah,
you know what
exactly.
I mean?
But hey, listen, if Arsenal do crumble, maybe he sensed weakness there, and Arsenal crumble, then maybe it will pay off. We'll see.
Well, possibly, but I mean, I really do question if these, I mean, you're right, I mean, Arsene has kind of like swung at these pitches in the dirt before, but I really do wonder if he's going to even... And today, I mean, he just kind of said he was embarrassment. He didn't kind of go off on the rails. But
right.
I really do if, like, I don't know, does this even work anymore in modern football? I mean,
yeah,
sure.
Well, I wonder. I mean, yeah, I mean, a team like Arsenal who is, you know, fragile, and, you know, as I mentioned before, Wenger called them nervous last week, of course. Maybe there's something there. But, yeah, it comes a while when it's like, oh, he's just spitting up again. He's saying
right.
these words again. Really? It's getting kind of boring, right? So, I don't know. I enjoy it to a certain point. I enjoy, you know, the colour that he brings to the Premier League. We've really missed that since he left, let's be honest. Especially with Ferguson leaving this year. I think there's a real void there.
Right.
And I think Mourinho's really filled that void. But, yeah, it is very old school, isn't it? And you think these guys have thick skin nowadays, but I get the impression that these things really do hurt Arsene Wenger. Deep down. And maybe, you know, he didn't respond, you know, go off on a limb this morning, but I get the impression that he can be a bit fragile and get miffed pretty quickly.
Surprisingly, Manuel Pellegrini is getting in the act too, which is a bit of a surprise because he's usually pretty reserved. Today he kind of came out and said Manchester City are now a bigger team than Manchester United.
Yeah.
Thoughts?
Okay. You know what, it's funny, I actually mentioned this. We're actually debuting on Sportsnet this year, a new segment today. Banter Zone's expanding, basically, and obviously you'll post it soon, JMO.
Right.
And I do address this quickly. And you know what, I think it's kind of lost in translation to a certain point.
Sure.
His English isn't the greatest. And when he said City's bigger than Man United, he means they're better, I think. And they are clearly better than Manchester United, there's no doubt. Saying they're bigger as far as the brand and how, you know, the following the club has is absolute nonsense. United dwarfs Man City at the moment. That might change in a few years' time if Man City keep winning, of course. But I think he was just addressing the fact that they are now, you know, the most legitimate contender in the city. And how can even the most ardent United fan argue that at this point?
Oh, I'm sure they will. But you're right. I mean, it's pretty. I mean, I don't think you can compare Man City and Manchester United at this point. I mean, it's, you know, with all due respect to the Red Devils.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe it'll change next year. Maybe they'll spend, you know, £200 million in the
sure.
summer. And but right now, there's no comparison. Who's got a better team? So I think that's what he's alluding to. But I think maybe the press are jumping more on the word bigger and assuming he meant something different, which I don't think he did.
Right. Some sad news as former Preston North End and England star mm-hmm. Tom Finney passed away on Friday at the age of 91. You obviously never saw him play, but growing up in England, I'm sure you knew all about his legend
yeah.
and was well aware. For the benefit of listeners who, you know, not sure who he is, maybe you can tell us how big of a star and how important was Tom Finney to English football?
Well, I mean, he's one of the greatest, as simple as that, in a very different era, a much simpler era, of course. You know, when he was playing for Preston North End, he was also, I think, a plumber on the side as well. You know, he didn't make enough money to, you know, make that his career, but a wonderful goal scorer for Preston North End. Had over 70 caps for England. And, you know, growing up, I obviously never saw him play, but he was one of those guys that was always there in the big games,
right.
being honored and, you know, waving to the crowd. And he's always a presence, you know, a guy from a different era, perhaps, but a guy that really transcended the sport in many ways. And for a country that hasn't really had that much success and, you know, on the international stage and too many truly great stars, he's certainly one of them. And he was someone that, you know, was very respected and was a gentleman by all accounts, you know, was very different to the modern era athlete. So yeah, different generation certainly, but a man that his presence will be missed at all the big occasions, that's for sure.
And a one club man, am I correct? I mean, did he only played at Preston, I think.
Yeah, exactly. One club yeah. man, yeah. Back in those days. Right?
Back in those days, too, which,
you know,
wow.
As if you'd be bought by another club, you know, make more money elsewhere. Professional was, it was really semi-professional, wasn't it, back then?
Right. Very very much the Paolo Maldini. Paolo
yeah.
Maldini of his era.
Well, not many other. And
no.
You know, there's a few towards the end of their careers now, right? The Steven Gerrards, the
Gigs.
Francesco Totti's, Gigs, of course.
Yeah.
You know, and you wonder in 10, 15 years how many there will be because, you know, right now it's all about the biggest paycheck. And
right.
hey, maybe some kid will come through at Man City and will be a star and won't leave because they can pay the most money. But hey, I think that era, sadly, is behind us. You know, that's why we say, you know, support the name on the front, not on the back, because players, they're going to jump ship whenever they want, and you can't really blame them, can you?
No. Sharms, what's coming up this week on the Soccer Central television show?
Well, you may or may not know, JMO, but it's a Champions League week.
I did hear something about that.
Did you?
Yeah, think so. Yeah.
Tuesday and Wednesday, four games. So we'll be covering those, actually previewing them today. We have Bobby McMahon on the show once again on Monday today, previewing those games, and we'll have full highlights and reaction. We'll probably hear from Jerry and Craig, I would imagine, as well, at some point throughout the week. Don't forget the top five worst of the week. You know, we do that on Tuesdays. It's my favorite segment. It's all the bad plays from the past week. We have one that will make it tomorrow. All I can say is you got to watch it. Okay, it's hilarious.
Oh.
It doesn't even involve a player.
Does it involve a dog in Argentina?
Oh, God, you know what I'm talking about.
Explain to the listeners.
Let's just say there's a dog in the field. And what do dogs do on grass, generally speaking, aside from sniffing? Yeah, they do that.
Yeah.
In a professional soccer match. And it sounds really trivial and juvenile, and it is, but hey, we are juvenile in Soccer Central, and we find it very, very funny. So
yeah, I saw the video this morning. It was pretty funny.
It was pretty hilarious. Yeah. The cameraman got right up there as well.
Yeah, and you alluded to it before, but we're launching a new web feature today, right?
Yeah. So if you've seen the Soccer Central show, we have a banter zone where basically we're asking you guys, the listeners and the viewers, to you know, debate and give your opinions and send topics. Well, today, starting today, every day, I'll be doing a little web hit around midday, which will be in sportsnet.ca/soccer. I'm right there, right, JMO?
That's correct.
And just giving my thoughts on some of the topics we're covering in the show each day, and hopefully trying to conjure some debate on your parts, and maybe I'll be trolling some teams and players. And just get on to Twitter, hashtag SCBanderZone, talk about what you want, and then we'll read out some of the best ones on the show each day.
Yeah, so it's going to be a daily video feature of James spouting off for 2 or 3 minutes. It's what he does best. So be sure to check it out. Sharms, thanks for joining us, and we'll talk soon, okay, buddy?
Anytime, mate. Speak to you soon.
Cheers.
Bye.
Just a reminder that you can watch all four of this week's UEFA Champions League matches live on Sportsnet. On Tuesday at 2:30 p.m. Eastern, you can watch Manchester City versus Barcelona on the main Sportsnet channel, and Bayer Leverkusen versus Paris Saint-Germain on Sportsnet World. On Wednesday at 2:30 p.m. Eastern, watch Arsenal versus Bayern Munich on the main Sportsnet channel, and AC Milan versus Atletico Madrid versus on Sportsnet World. Also on Thursday, Sportsnet will be showing 5 UEFA Europa League matches. Go to sportsnet.ca and check out the broadcast schedule to see what games we'll be showing. And a reminder that I'll be hosting another edition of the Soccer Central radio show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan on Thursday night. If you can't listen live, don't worry. You can always download the show from the podcast page and from iTunes. Okay, guys, that's another edition of the Soccer Central podcast in the books. I'll return next Monday with another show. Until then, cheers for listening.